Hello and welcome to episode 174 of Scene Invaders. I am your host, Dan. Today we have my brother, Drew, all the way out from California again.
Hey, what's good, y'all? How you doing?
So today we are going to cover The Boys season recap in general. If you guys were here listening to Drew and Sean talk about their predictions, they were spot on about something, but we're going to talk about that at the end of the episode. So I just want to remind you guys, we do have a merch drop coming. It's going to be for the Christmas season. It's going to be probably on sale for about a month. We have snapbacks, masks, and t-shirts. If you would like to see the list of these clothes or pictures, email sceneinvaders@gmail.com. I'll send them to you. And then we're going to have prices out probably within the next 2-3 weeks. And that'll be posted on Twitter. If you guys want to follow along for this merch drop, the easiest thing to do is just follow us on Twitter. But again, if you want to just email us, that's fine. Sceneinvaders@gmail.com. We have the prototype of the hat. Drew, have you seen the prototype?
It looks sick. I'm definitely going to be topping that as soon as I can.
Yeah. So I think we might just go with the black because everyone's saying they want the black one. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that this whole merch drop could just be all black. I don't want to end up making some white stuff that just doesn't move. And like we said before, you know, we're not making anything here. We just want to have some merch out there in the world. This show's been around for 3 years, and I think it looks really cool.
I love it.
Yeah, it looks really nice. The snapback came out great. Again, that was the only one that was actually a prototype, but I bought a mask off this guy before and everything looks sharp, and he makes t-shirts and I've seen them and they all look sharp. It's called Lance's Brands. You can find him on Facebook. He does all types of stuff. Like he makes cups, like he makes like anything you can think of. He figures out a way to make it. And he's really, he just started this company about 5 months ago. So he's really eager to work with you. He agreed to ship everything for me. I just have to pay for it. So again, I don't even have to store anything. So this guy is really great to work with. I highly suggest him. Every order that you guys get will come with his business card. So if you guys need something like that, you can work with Lance's Brands. He's very, very easy to work with.
So
yeah. And again, please follow us on our social media pages. It'll be the easiest way to keep up with this merch drop. I had a medical thing, so I don't know when everything is going to be on sale, but it will be on sale for the Christmas season. So probably the first week of December through the first week of January is what we're looking at. I originally wanted to do November, but it's just too soon to everything else that's going on. Okay. Yeah. So it's really cool stuff. So make sure you guys get a peek at it. I think this logo is great and the color scheme's cool. And that the snapback came out so cool. I mean, I had people texting me like, yo, dude, I want this now.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm going to have one and hopefully we can see a couple of these hats popping up across the world. For you foreign listeners, foreign to the US, we'll ship anywhere. If you guys want a hat, we'll get you a hat. whatever you want. It'd be easier if you bought in bulk, like say, you know, two shirts and a hat and a mask, so we can just ship it all together, and that the shipping cost I intend to cover myself. If it's like crazy like that, I'll split it. But yeah, I know we have people obviously in Canada, Ireland, Morocco, we're all over the world, so we'll get
exotic.
We'll get it to you guys. So if you want the stuff, we'll get it to you. But if you buy more than one thing, it'll be better on us, if you know what I'm saying. Because again, we're not going to make any money here. We're just doing this to try to get a little brand presence, and it's exciting stuff. So that's why I'm going to talk about it in the beginning of every episode until that happens. All right. So, Drew, I have a couple things here. Do you want to tell me what you've been watching first?
I haven't been doing too much anything new. I mean, I think me and you, as well as probably everyone on the planet, has watched the new Borat movie.
Yes.
I feel like, first of all, I think it's very cool. It's like in a year where everyone's kind of like kind of groups around like pop culture things. I know Tiger King early on was super big, and a couple other like TV shows and series. I feel like this is one of probably the last of the COVID year of big pop culture releases that are going to be coming out that everybody's going to be watching. You know, I mean, I went to work the day after and every single person there was like, oh, I saw it. I want to see it. What were your thoughts about the movie?
I want to read what Brad tweeted me first. Brad from Canada. He says, okay, just watched Borat 2. Fucking funny and different. It's the first comedy that's made me laugh out loud in a long while, and I watched it alone. And then I said, it was funny. That dude is crazy. He gives zero fucks. And then Brad said, never seen an actor put himself out like that. He really has no fear.
Oh, no.
I laughed a lot. I don't think it was better than the first one, do you?
I don't either. And in my opinion, I feel like that's because, and again, the original joke of the movie was, oh, everyone knows who Borat is. I feel like, right. in most of the scenes, I feel like a lot of the times they tip their hands. I mean, it's like, hey, this is like a spoof documentary, just play along, you know?
Yeah.
But like some of them were very clearly, especially like a lot of like the rally stuff and some of those like on the street interviews, but a lot of like the inside the building scenes, you can kind of tell, like, all right, they tip their hand a little bit, and it's like, hey, just play along with it, you know, we'll cut you in on the movie deal, stuff like kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of lessened it a little bit, but I still thought it was incredible, and obviously, Sacha Baron Cohen was amazing, but I feel like the actress, I believe her name's like Maria Bakalova or something like that.
The one who played his daughter?
I thought she killed it. I thought she was like the star of the movie, without a doubt.
Yeah. She was funny, man. That whole thing with the cages, she's like, well, I want a cage that's like my
mom's. Yeah.
Like, it was so, it's so inappropriate, but it's good. I think.
Uh-huh.
I think it's about time we've had something like that, because everything is so PC when it comes to comedy these days. Like, you just,
this one definitely went out there and like,
right. And I appreciate the boundaries. That. Yeah. I appreciate
it even kind of showed like the scene where it was like, I'm quoting it, but it was like they're at the cage, and it's like he asked for Jews will not replace us to be put on the cage.
Yeah, and the person was like, okay.
It was like a second she hesitated. She's like, all right, well, he's paying for this cage.
Whatever you want.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
Can you spell that out for me?
Yeah, but I thought it was really good. I thought, obviously, like the Giuliani scene was like the cringy moment, man. And
that
it
was
super cringy.
Oh,
but it was definitely felt smaller in scale in some senses than the first one. But I thought it was still pretty good. Obviously, they were heavily hampered by COVID happening to the extent that it did.
It's kind of I'm sorry. It's kind of impressive what they did with that though, because mm-hmm. they take COVID, and obviously it hit when they were filming, you could tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they have a couple funny scenes with that where he's trying to like punch COVID.
Yeah. Oh yeah, when he's in the cabin with with like the QAnon guys. But like, and you can tell though, it's like they definitely started filming this at the beginning of the year, you know, like early on.
Right.
It was like, oh hey, COVID. And even they probably as a crew were like, oh, it's probably not gonna be a big thing. And then it went down, you know, and mm-hmm. the whole world locked down. They're like, all right, how do we manage to turn this into a film still? And I thought they did a really good job. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like it's definitely the good end cap for this year as a Borat movie.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. But I kind of feel like that's how the whole nation was. Everybody was like, oh, okay, it's COVID, mm-hmm. COVID. And then out of nowhere, it's like, oh, this is real. And everything is shut down.
Everything changes. Yeah.
So I remember the last time I went to the studio with Pat, it's, you know, right before COVID, mm-hmm. right before everything shut down. I'm in the studio and I'm like, dude, what do you think's going to be going on? And he's like, I don't know. All I know is I'll be talking about the Sixers 3 weeks from now. Literally, he know, like the next day they canceled the NBA, mm-hmm. or they put it on hold.
Oh, yeah, the Rudy Gobert.
Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like once Rudy Gobert got it, everybody was
that
like,
that was it.
Oh.
And yeah. I agree with you, because that was during my college. I was still in college. It was my spring break. And I decided to stay back in Troy where I was going, just I was working part-time. Like, I was like, work a week of full-time, get some extra money real quick. But all my boys were out, like, international in all different countries. Like, our college had, like, it leaked an email about, like, their plan for COVID. I'm like, hey, guys, it's pretty crazy if this would actually happen. And not in the next day, whole thing was shut down. I'm like,
so fast,
oh,
man.
Not even 24 hours after I found, like, the college's response plan, it was, like, 2 weeks of, like, a buffer space. So spring break out instead of, like, 3 weeks pretty much. And then mm-hmm. it was just, like, all online, and after that it was just complete shutdown of the whole world pretty much.
Yeah, I can't believe it, man. Like outside of this recent medical emergency I had, I've been working from home for months, man, and now I got to go in because I just got a new role in the company. but to train. But it's just so strange, dude. Like, everything just stopped and the whole world just adjusted to do things differently and remotely. Mm-hmm. And Zoom, dude, we're on Zoom right now. Like, did you hear about Zoom before this happened?
I had not heard of like any of these. The only thing I heard was Skype. And I saw someone joke, and it's like, you know, Skype had was king of the mountain for 11 years and then dropped the ball. And then one year it could have done something. Yeah, but Skype, WebEx, all those things, they just took over. It's, I mean, in my opinion, that's, I know a lot of, I work with a lot of guys, or I know a lot of guys in college that are in tech and coding, and Amazon, Twitter, all the companies that they work for are more or less going permanent work from home.
Yeah.
So a large sector of America is going to be doing what we're doing right now for the rest of time, probably.
I honestly think for some companies, figuring out that they can work from home is kind of a blessing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they got to pay for office space and shit like that.
Office space, nearly liability, people there. You know, it's like, would you rather pay yearly rent for some, for like a person to have an office space, or just say, here's $2,000, outfit your house with a home office, you know?
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
I think this is changing the workforce for forever. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, people are going to go back to work, sure.
But I'm still working in, I work in a civil engineer, I work construction, so I'm still out there every day on the site. Right. But even on the site, it's like completely different.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, you know, old man mass and stuff. But no, I agree with that. But
I think.
Back to Borat, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. I think, I mean, if you just want like a pick me up and a good like way to look back in this whole year and this like the whole political culture, pop culture, zeitgeist of America right now, this is definitely the way to poke fun at it and just kind of take your mind off things for 2 hours, you know?
He's so funny, man. And he really never breaks because that stuff. All that stuff is all improvised because they're messing with political figures. They're messing with.
And even between each other. So something I learned is, so in the movie, they don't speak English like to one another, him and his daughter. Mm-hmm. But I found out the entire movie, which is funny, because Borat, the character, hates Jews. He speaks Hebrew entire film. And then his daughter, I believe she speaks Romanian. So they're speaking to each other in different languages. And then the captions they put in are in post. So they basically need to like play. I believe they play off of each other's like physical gesturing and emotions and facial expressions.
So they don't even know what they're saying.
Exactly. So in the scene, like for example, when they're at the cage store.
Yeah.
I thought the hunting store. But when they're like arguing at the counter, they're not knowing what they're saying. So they're physically like having to like mime and pantomime to each other to what they're trying to convey, which I mean further speaks, in my opinion, to their acting ability.
Yeah, dude. They're very good.
To be able to do.
I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen, like, there's no one like him. There's really not.
And
like, really I feel like if Key and Peele wanted to, they could prank
they
people.
They could have done that level of stuff if they wanted to go in that direction. But I think they wanted to go for more of, let's turn every... Key and Peele is more of, like, let's turn every pop culture or, you know, stereotype up to 11.
Yeah.
To show the absurdity of it, you know?
And then...
Which I mean, I think works an equal effect as Sacha Baron Cohen showing the reality of it, you know?
So do you know that Key and Peele actually both started together on Mad TV?
Really?
Yeah. So their careers have evolved from Mad TV, and then, you know, that show went under because it could never really compete with Saturday Night Live, even though it kept trying to.
Yeah.
And then that goes under. So then Comedy Central were like, yo, these guys were great. Let's give them their own sketch show. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that had, what, 5-6 year run? It had a nice run.
I believe it was 5. It surprised me. It was shorter than I thought it was, because me and my buddy Neil would watch those clips every day in college. Yeah. It'd be like, you know, watching Key and Peele. Yeah, we watched for like an hour and a half, and it'd just be like new skit. And they're all amazing. Yeah.
So the reason why they stopped the show is because they wanted to have enough skits that they were like truly proud of and that they found funny. They wouldn't just do something just for the hell of it.
Like, and you can tell that. Like, there really aren't many misses.
Yeah, right.
EMPO. It's usually pretty solid all around.
So I feel like they feel like, which I agree with, that they mastered sketch comedy and improv
and
sketch comedy,
100%
whatever.
Did.
Right. So they're like, all right, what's next? You know, obviously Jordan Peele goes on to be this great director. Like, who knew?
This great horror social commentary as director. It just does incredible things.
Yeah, I mean, he had two absolute bangers back to back. And I'm sure his third movie is going to be good too. I mean, the guy, you can tell
he has a great mind for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of like direction and everything.
And then Keegan-Michael Key, he's going the acting route, and you can tell, you can tell that he wants to get into drama, you know, comedy. Obviously he has a soft spot for comedy, but he's doing all types of stuff. I mean, he was in the Predator movie, which was actually better than I thought it was going
to
be.
Really? Yeah. I tend to stay away from a lot of those. I mean, I really grew up, I mean, like, you know, I grew up, but like, I really like grew up at the back of like a lot of those older movies that you probably wouldn't expect a kid like my age to love, but like, I love the old Predator, love the old Alien, Rambo, stuff like that. So I kind of like strayed away from a lot of those 80s and 90s action remakes. So I might check that out then. What else are you watching then?
Hold on one second. It's actually a lot better than I thought. And Boyd Holbrook, I just wanted to point him out. He's in this. I really like him. I mean, him and Joel Kinnaman are pretty much like the same actor, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I always enjoy Boyd Holbrook. Like when he was the villain in Logan, he did a great job. Shadow of the Moon, that's on Netflix. He's great in that.
Okay.
In the Shadow of the Moon. And then there was one more that I can't remember. Run All Night. That was him in Liam Neeson, and then he was in Walk Amongst the Tombstones. So he has a couple, really good performances, and then obviously Narcos. I really like that guy. So outside of Borat, I am continuing The Haunting of Bly Manor. Did you ever see Hill House?
I did. So I did watch the first like a season or like story of the Haunting series, the Hill House one. I thought it was really good. I actually watched that thing. It was over Thanksgiving. I went down to Uncle Dave, me and Dan's aunt and uncle, but me and our cousin Rachel watched it in like a night or two, and it was really good.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, so what do you think of it so far? Is the one actor who plays Owen, Raul Coley, right? I follow him on Twitter. I think he's really funny. He's on a lot of YouTube videos that I watch as well.
Okay.
But yeah, so I'm able to check this out. Yeah, I have been wanting to recently. I've heard like very divisive things.
Yeah.
I've heard you either really love it, like absolutely love it, or it's like middle of the ground.
So
middle of the road.
For me, I have it middle of the road, but it's kind of not fair. And this happened with True Detective. This happens with shows that are anthology when you just can't really live up to how good the first season was. It was just too good, man. I mean, it was scary. It was well done. It was a great story.
Yeah.
It was pretty much like everything you need. And the family aspect was so cool because apparently each kid was like one of the stages of grief or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first season, not really. And then like also, I know where it was like, they kind of do it like almost like they're like promoting it this season with like the hidden ghosts.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, in each scene. But in the first season, you would like see one every episode of the other corner, like, yo, what the fuck was, and like, it would like freak you out and it would get you more tense. I feel like this season, they like instantly push like, oh guys, the hidden ghosts are back. And then it's like, all right, well, they're not really hidden then, you know, like, which is fine. If you want like your show or your series is like thing to be, hey, we hide little horror things and like hands reaching around corners in every scene. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But when the first season does it so well and like truly like makes it elevate the scenes that they're in, as opposed to just being like the, oh, look, we can make a tweet about this. I think it kind of lessens it a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
Granted, I haven't seen this new season yet. I probably will when I have a chance. Because I heard really good things about the acting in it, but
no, you're right. They took something that worked in season one and they tried to amplify it for season two. But sometimes it's just like, you know, the reason why it was good is because you held it back so much.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe don't blow it up again.
Yeah.
If you're trying to make this work again, just follow the same ingredients. You don't need to do, you know, more. But I'll tell you what, it's not fair that people are saying it's not good. I hear what you're saying. It's very divisive. People are like, oh, it's incredible, or it's okay. I was, oh, it's okay, until I saw episode 5. That blew my mind. They did some really neat shit. They give a perspective of one of the characters going and seeing all the creepy stuff that's happened at this house.
Yeah.
She gets to like walk and experience it in like real time. I don't know how or what happened, but it's kind of cool because they dropped a little Easter egg in episode 1 that she was kind of like daydreaming, and then it
paid
off down the line. Some of the same actors, the one who played Nellie. The girl who's in You. She's actually from Philly. I just found that out last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then the kid from E.T., who's now a grown man, who was the father, the drug addict brother, he was in it. He's got an awesome Scottish accent this season. I don't know if he's from Scotland, but he nailed that accent. I really like it. I do really like it. And I'll be done it soon. So I'll give my final opinion on it next week. But I mean, for people that enjoy horror, especially it's fall, it's almost
Halloween. I was just about to say that this seems to be like this year's scary Halloween thing, you know? Yeah. Like every year you get like one where it's like, oh, we're all watching this one scary movie or one scary TV show. Right. And I feel like this is this year's one. And I mean, again, if you have that highlighted keynote spot, you can basically, you know, it's pretty tough to miss. So,
yeah. Like Bill's texting me about it right now. And I'm like, I think you'll like it. Give it a shot. You know, it's just like for the people who loved season one so much that aren't even starting it, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me because this is how stuff gets canceled. You know,
where it's like, oh, I hate it. It's not season one. And then it's like, all right, well, now we get no more. It's like,
now it's
what happened to the Haunting series?
Yeah.
And it's a cool premise. Again, it's like a horror anthology series of just like one haunted house. I like that. I would watch that all the time, you know?
Yeah, it's like American Horror Story, but it's not cheesy. Because American Horror Story started cool. Season
and
one
then
was
it like
great.
Went to next
oh, bro.
Levels.
Dude, I just watched the one that took place in like a summer camp in the 1980s. It was like a Friday the 13th.
Like classic slasher. Yeah, horror. Yeah.
Dude, so cheesy, man. I'm like, how did this show go from something that was really well written, really well done?
Where it's like, oh, cool, like slices of Americana horror. It's like, it had a really cool premise, and it's like, oh, we'll just blow up to 11. And again, it's like in like the wrong way, though.
Yeah, it's kind of what happened with Happy Death Day season two. They took a cool premise and they just made it cheesy. For the second, did you see both of those or no?
I've seen the first one, I believe. I didn't see the second one.
First one was good, right?
First one was good, yeah.
It was actually a good movie.
But yeah, it's a cool premise. It's like, oh, like it's kind of similar to Palm Springs, which I really liked, where it's like, oh, it's like Groundhog Day, but a really cool twist on it. It's like, oh, what if Tom Hanks had a partner? Oh, what if Tom Hanks is getting murdered every single day?
What's your favorite type of those movies on top of your head?
I really did like Palm Springs.
That's up there for me. It's definitely
is. I mean, like, I feel like Groundhog Day is probably tough to beat. It's just like, not only did it like kind of not invent the idea, but like it really was kind of, it's kind of the one you think of, you know?
And it still holds up big time.
It holds up great. I mean, they did it and it did everything well. It did a lot of things well too. I mean, like even explores some things they do in like Palm Springs, which they like probably thought were interesting about like, oh, how he's depressed and suicidal and they like just kill themselves over and over again.
Yeah.
He does that in Groundhog Day too, which is pretty dark, but I mean, it's a comedy, but it still does it. So I think Groundhog Day is probably the best. Palm Springs is probably a close second for me.
Their chemistry is so good.
In Palm Springs?
Kristen Milioti and Andy Samberg.
Oh, it's awesome.
Man, so good, dude. Like, when she's freaking out and she thinks she can just kill herself and it'll be fine. I
mean, he's just unbuckling the seatbelt.
See you tomorrow.
He's just like, this will be less painful, all right? And she's like, and she like looks for a second. She's like, well, he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to do it real quick.
Like, we can just go to the bar. And then and then they die and it cuts to them at the bar. It's just such a well-done movie. The soundtrack is great.
Oh, I love it,
My favorite would be Edge of Tomorrow, I think, with Tom.
Okay, Cruise. I mean, it's another great one that, like, took the concept and twisted it in a really unique way, you know?
Yeah, like, you can so, I mean, basically, no matter what kind of movie you're trying to make, it's been done. It's been done before.
Yeah.
So if you can find a way to put your own original twist on it,
and even a small one, this is a small one. Like again, for Palm Springs versus Groundhog Day, all they did was say, "Hey, what if there was another person doing the same thing?" And that was it. It's the premises are very identical, you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's not too many things you can change, but what you can change is, you know, how the characters act in the situation. Mm-hmm. Unique ways to try to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, you can only see this type of movie so many times unless they tinker and make changes. Like with Tom Cruise's, like he just couldn't get a blood transfusion.
Yeah.
And all he needed was a blood transfusion to get out of this loop. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there are a lot of good ones out there. And I'm sure there's a lot of bad ones, but I really do like these kinds of movies. I think they're fun because usually the first scene, they show you so many things specifically, like,
and then it leads in so much later.
A person walking their dog, or like someone trips, or like someone mowing the lawn, and it'll all come back and pay off in the end. And I think that's so neat. I love smart writers when they like figure something out,
and when you can see when you like see it in the film, it's like, oh wow, they put real emphasis and thought on that door being open, or that one line in the at the 10-minute mark that wrapped around and was a critical turning point, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But
so it's just really fun stuff. Yeah. But okay, so yeah, Haunting of Bly Manor. I mean, guys, if you like horror, just watch it. I mean, it's on Netflix. It's generally a pretty quick watch. It's taken me longer than normal. I don't know why. Maybe because it actually is really scary. The Haunting of Hill House was scarier, but this one is still scary. Like, there's a couple shots that are like pretty haunting, dude. So so do you have anything that you've been watching, anything else, or do you want
to the only other thing I'm watching, so as longtime listeners know, I think my first or second appearance in the show, I announced I was starting my pro wrestling career. Sadly, I've retired after that. I had about 6 matches in the independent wrestling circuit. But one of the biggest pro wrestling events every year is something called the G1 Climax. And it's a Japanese wrestling promotion. And it's basically a month long of 2 tournament style blocks. So it's 2 10-person blocks. Every wrestler fights every person within the block. And then whoever has the most wins goes on to the championship. It's really cool in my mind. Just a lot of wrestling nowadays, especially if like you grew up watching Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Monday Night Raw stuff, where it's every single week they fight, and you know, sometimes they'll come out with crutches. There's a match for every block every 2 days. So if you fight on Monday, you fight on Wednesday, fight on Friday.
Oh, cool.
So it really kind of takes it more into a real professional fighting sort of aspect. And it's easily some of the best wrestling in terms of like moves and people just doing crazy flips and stuff you can find. Just ended a couple days ago. Really cool stuff. So if you're into wrestling at all, or if you've never watched it and haven't watched it since the Attitude Era 20 years ago, G1 Climax, New Japan, some really cool stuff. Outside of that, nothing too much. I'm reading some manga again, some couple things there.
Oh, yeah?
Really cool releases.
Anything that's going to become a movie or a show anytime soon?
So there's a couple. So one of them, Grappler Baki. It's actually an anime on Netflix right now. It's pretty absurd. It's basically a show about just a father who has basically tried to birth the perfect son because he wants his son to beat him in a fight.
Wow.
And that's like the most, like I mentioned last time I was on, that's the most bare bones premise I can give without turning people off of the show. It's on Netflix. It has, again, a really cool art style. It's very fluid, really, really cool fight scenes. It's actually the first season that's on Netflix right now is actually a sequel to a 1999 season that happened. So it's a little bit jarring when you first watch it, but it catches you up pretty quickly. Really cool. Again, so it's like they're fun 20-minute episodes. They also do some pretty cool stuff. Like their most recent season introduces a character called Ali Jr., who was the son of Muhammad Ali.
Oh, okay.
into the show. So it does some cool things there. Other than that, nothing too crazy.
Okay. What would you say you get more excited for? I was talking about this with my buddy Hodor, who just started streaming. He's trying to become his general goal is to have playthroughs.
Yeah.
So he can beat single player games and stuff like that. But he'll stream Fortnite, Fall Guys, you know, whatever. But he wants to be a playthrough guy. So what do you, and I know you like single player games a lot too.
Yes.
So what do you say you'd get more excited for? Getting an awesome single player game like Bloodborne that you can really sink your teeth into it and play like, you know, a good 70 hours or something like that.
Or
a great new show that has like 3 seasons and you get the binge. Like, both of those are such satisfying moments.
They are.
Cool, I got this to look forward to. So, let me lay it out this way. You you watch one episode of the show. Like, I'm like, yo, Drew, check this out. And there's three seasons total. And you watch one episode and you love it. And you're like, oh, let's go. This is great. Or you're at your friend's house and you start playing a game. And you're like, oh, what is this game? And then you're like, screw. And he's like, oh, you know what? You can have it. And you take it home.
Yeah. So
which one of those would get you more excited?
That's a very tough question.
Right?
If it's a show I'm really going to like love and to the caliber, like I don't buy many video games new. And if it's the caliber that I'm like, oh, I need to get this game. If it's that level of show, I'd probably go to the show.
Okay.
It's tough for me to find like a show I really love, like sinking my teeth into and being like, wow, I love this show. It usually leads me to like just diving into everything about it.
Right. That's the brand.
Granted, I would say it happens way more with new single player releases.
Yeah.
And I say I like single player games more just because it's tough for me to like organize people, especially now that I'm on the West Coast. It's tough for me to be like, I mean, like for me to play Warzone with some of my friends, I text them at noon on the day, the day before, and I'm like, hey guys, I'm getting off work early today. At 5 o'clock my time, we can play.
Yeah, right. It's like this whole thing.
Yeah, so I would say probably if it's a really good show, I would probably go to the show, but it happens more often with video games for me, especially single player.
That's a good answer. Are you getting dubs in Warzone?
Oh, yeah, always. Yeah. Always get dubs. Fat dubs.
I've only played the game a handful of times. I'm talking like 15 matches total. I want to re-download it, but I need to get a memory stick.
You should have told me, dude. Amazon Prime, I just picked up a 5 terabyte memory drive for $100.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I need that for Christmas. So
look up. The brand is WD_Black. They're really good product, I've heard. And I mean, I got 5 terabyte for $100. You really don't need. I'm probably set for the rest of my gaming career with that.
So check it out. I've been a loving brother to you for your whole life.
Okay, yeah.
You're making money now. Get me it for Christmas, bro.
All right, listen, there you go.
Because we were talking about a couple games that we miss playing, one being Bloodborne, one being Friday the 13th. Did you ever play that?
Oh, I love Friday the 13th. I feel like everyone really didn't like it. I thought it was like so like cheesy in the best way.
We play together once?
We did. We played a couple times. Yeah,
we escaped on like our first try.
Yeah.
So Ian, his Twitch name is Waif Runner, right? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he never escaped and he never won as Jason. And I'm like, well, how much did you play? He was like, not much. I always played by myself. So I'd only play like 2 matches and then go to something else. I'm like, dude, I was obsessed with that game because when it first came out, I saw it on Conan. He was playing, he like does games every now and then.
I remember he did this sometimes. Yeah.
And then I found Typical Gamer. You ever watch that guy?
I feel like I've heard of him. I've never watched him, but I have heard of him, I believe.
So he's from Vancouver, and him and his girlfriend, Samara Redway, they're both streamers. So I used to watch them play and I'd get strategies like, guys, people out there, this game was so fun. So you'd either be a counselor, and there was how many counselors? Like,
I believe so. You were basically five or six counselors
who
would basically run around, do tasks. They would collect different pieces. There was, I think there was 2 different ways to escape, if I remember right. One was fixing the boat. and drive away with the boat, or you could fix the car and drive away with the car.
Or you could fix the phone and call the cops.
Or you can call the cops. The problem was a lot of the finales didn't have enough room for everybody.
Right.
So it'd be like a boat, but only with 3 seats, or a car only with 4 seats. So it was cool. Like, and it'd be panicking. It'd be like, oh, 5 of you were there. Sometimes someone would just jump in the car because they were scared, drive away, and leave the rest of them to get killed.
I used to love fixing the boat. This is the type of game I would like to stream because, like, say me, you, and what
his so much
name's Waif Runner, we're all doing this and streaming it. That would be a blast because you truly got to work together. Like when me and Drew escaped, we had to find you got to find pieces of the boat, like the motor, gas. And
it'd be like in a drawer. You'd be in like a house and you'd be like, oh, you open a drawer and you'd be like, oh, I just found a propeller. And have to run across the map then.
Because they'd all be generally close to the boat, but not that close.
No.
And again, Jason could like transport to you whenever he wanted to. So you had to be really sneaky. So you had to use a lot of tactics, a lot of finesse. And some players were fast, but they made a lot of noise. Some players were slow, but you couldn't hear them walk at all. Yeah. So it was so fun.
It was a very fun game that I feel like was super overlooked by.
Oh, big time. Everybody. Because the other one came out, Dead by Daylight.
Dead by Daylight, which again, very similar. That was that game, but on a much smaller scale.
I think Friday the 13th looked a lot better.
It looked more stylized, which I always think if you're making a game, at least like not maybe not super recently, but back in like when these games are coming out, if you're making a game, make it heavily stylized because it ages the best.
So did you play Dead by Daylight at all?
I did. I played a little bit. I played a couple games of it.
I never played that one.
It's a lot more. It's a smaller map. You only fit generators. There's a little bit less variety, but it's a little bit quicker.
Okay.
Which I think drew in a lot more people.
Yeah. Okay. Cause Friday the 13th, the matches could take like 25 minutes.
Take a long time. And it'd be a lot of like, it'd be fun if you like that, where it's like, oh, it's tense. I'm hiding in a closet. I see him walk by. All right, now I'll leave and start like crawling through the woods and stuff.
Cause I would try to, fix the phones a lot. And this praise for Friday the 13th is ending soon. I'm just telling you guys, it's fun. And check it out. So when you fix the phone, if you'd finally fix it, it would make a dial tone noise, and then a timer would start 5 minutes, and it would start counting down for 5 minutes. And once the 5 minutes was up, the cops would show up at the exit, and all you got to do is run to the cops and you escape the map. The whole objective is just to escape. If you're a counselor, just don't die and try to escape. If you're Jason, you got to try to kill everyone. And it's completely random. So when you'd fix the phone, it would make a dial tone, and good Jasons would know exactly where to teleport. Mm-hmm. There'd be a cooldown for your teleport, but if you waited for that,
you wait for like a surefire sign of something, like someone shot a flare off by accident, or like someone broke a window, you could be like, I'm going there.
So what I would do is I'd try to fix the phone and then immediately book it to the woods and stay still, and hopefully he doesn't see me. And then, start making my escape. Or maybe he's chasing somebody else. But anyway, guys, such a fun game. And so we were talking about this because PlayStations these days, or anything really, if you don't have a memory card of some sort, you can barely hold anything.
It's rough. I was fighting for a while to get even two big games on my PlayStation. Yeah. Right now I have Red Dead Redemption 2. I've been playing that a little bit, just going back. I've messed around with the multiplayer a little bit, so it's fun. And now I have Call of Duty Warzone, and then I have like 3 or 4 10 gigabyte games.
Yeah, see, Warzone takes up a load of space.
And that's a different problem, which I know I've read a lot about, and it's just a whole thing where there's lazy and don't want to, what's the word I'm looking for? They want to make it easier for like loading times or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's something stupid for Activision, but yeah. That's why I bought that terabyte drive, though. And I'll buy you one for Christmas, Dan.
Thank you.
I'll send it on out there.
Sounds good to me.
One quick video game note, if you don't mind.
Good.
Are you hyped? I know you're a PS4 guy, so you're probably buying the PS5 eventually. Are you hyped for the new Spider-Man game?
I am and I'm not, because I tell you the truth, dude, those types of games kind of bore me.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't find the fighting to be difficult.
It's kind of like the almost like the Batman Arkham style.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
Where it's like fight, dodge.
Like, I love the game and I love the story, but the action just isn't there for me.
That's fair. That's a very common critique. I feel like the combat is like either you love it or you hate it. I absolutely love it. Spider-Man for PS4 might have been one of my games of that console for me.
Game of the year for good.
This is the fact that it's like Spider-Man 2 for the old Xbox was the game I have probably played the most in my entire life of.
Yeah, I remember that. You played that. I was just like,
I'll just restart it again.
Seriously. I had to beat that Vulture part so many times. So you played that all the time.
Bro. All the time.
You just like swinging around.
It's so much fun. Yeah. And they got the same guy that coded the first one to do this one. So now the swinging's amazing again.
That's great. you could just swing from the clouds.
That's great.
So we're talking about this because I literally have Fortnite, FIFA, Fall Guys, all F games, I'm realizing, and Rocket League. That's all I have because I wanted to put Fall Guys and Rocket League back on, so I had to delete Warzone.
Yeah.
And I still own, quote unquote, Warzone.
Yeah.
But you can only install it if you uninstall a couple other games. So I want to have Warzone back on it. I want to have Until Dawn back on it. Crash Bandicoot, I have it sitting here. And I can't play it. Days Gone, Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice. I had all these games.
And that's starting to become the problem with like the memory space is we're starting to reach a limit where it's like, okay, we need to really pack the initial console full of it, which they're doing now. Is I believe both of the consoles have about a terabyte of built-in memory on them now.
Yeah,
I
think you need
Xbox
it
Series X has a terabyte. PS5 is 825 gigabytes.
It's annoying. And if you guys are like, oh, why can't you just, you know, install one and uninstall the other, it takes forever. Like
if you don't have A1 internet, it's rough.
Yeah.
Like, my internet's not that great out here now. And it's like if I want to download a new game, I have to commit to it. You know, it's like I'm like, all right, I would be playing this game for at least 3 or 4 weeks and I have to lock that in.
But I would love it because you know this guy's streaming now. So I would love to help him play different games and do all this kind of thing. So I was like, oh man, I wish we could just switch to Friday the 13th right now. But you can't. It's like this whole fucking thing. So that's my rant, and I need more memory.
That's all right. In summation.
So that's why we say you know, anything else we want to talk about because we kind of just really
go on tirade
sometimes. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. Okay, so we got a couple news segments. COVID-19 continues to impact new releases. No big surprise here, but I found this one quite interesting. So, as you know, Mulan went straight to Disney Plus people who had Disney Plus had to pay $30 on top of the $7 subscription plan, and the movie would disappear after a couple days because Mulan is eventually gonna be on Disney Plus for anyone who has the service, but this was like you had to pay for it early to watch it because it was supposed to be in movie theaters, right? And that was, you know, $30, so they probably made a good amount of money. What do you think? Like,
I don't think they did, honestly.
You think 100,000 people bought it?
I think that many people bought it, but like I think they were thinking this was a big grossing movie they were planning, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
like when Disney puts its money behind something, it's usually it spets and receives a return on investment. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like they gunned for like over $750 million for all their big movies.
Yeah, or like at least like 100, at least like 50% plus revenue and you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Like they definitely have those criteria set up. But I think they kind of realized what I feel like Netflix realized, where it's not easy to make money off big productions if you're a streaming service, you know, where a lot of like the Netflix like movies and originals are not like super huge budget, you know.
Yeah, you get a couple every now and then,
but it's like you realize it's tough to like really put out an A1 thing and then also make money off of it, you know.
Yeah, and no one really knows how much any of these
it's all profitized.
Everything's no one private. Has any clue. So anyway, this is getting ridiculous. So Coming to America, they're redoing it, I guess.
Coming to America.
Oh, it's a sequel.
Yeah.
So it's gonna have the same actors then.
I'm not sure. I haven't really heard a whole lot about it, but
all right. So anyway, this got sold for over $120 million. Over $120 million for Amazon Studios to have this movie on their streaming service.
So is it already filmed and is it like, has it like gone gold? So it's like they just handed them the flash drive and said, here you go, pretty much.
Yeah, it's going to get released in December. It's going to be on the service in December.
So I feel like this and along with kind of the next that we're leading into is they're just trying to make their money back. Like, they're like, hey, this is like the bare minimum we need to break even.
It's crazy, man. And then you think of Lord of the Rings, the TV show they're doing. They had to pay like $400 million just for the rights. Or was it $250 million? Yeah, I think it was $250 million.
Yeah, I believe just it was.
Just for the rights. That doesn't include making the show.
Filming, actors.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I mean, I guess you're thinking it's a long-run investment because I guess they're going to make money off of any merchandise, I guess they'll get a slice of.
And I mean, Lord of the Rings is kind of like not only like one of the biggest, it's like a generational spanning, you know, like I know people my age that are invested in it, your age, 20 years, like 30 years older than me. Like, you know, it's like everyone loves Lord of the Rings.
My buddy's wedding ring is the ring, is the one ring. So, I mean, yeah, it's crazy. But okay, so here's what we're leading up to. Okay. James Bond, No Time to Die. MGM is considering moving it to Apple or Netflix. So Apple TV Plus and Netflix are the two leaders to land James Bond, No Time to Die. The only thing is, they want $600 million.
Absurd.
$600 million, okay? So basically, they want almost what this movie would make on the box office. Could you look up how much Spectre made at the box? That was the last one, right?
Spectre. But I agree. I think that's exactly what they're doing. They're literally just trying to say, hey, just pay us what this movie would have made, you know?
But like, how does Netflix make money off of this? They don't.
They don't. And that's why they probably bought that. It like, because in MGM's mind, so Spectre first off made $880 million.
Okay.
Purely box office. So that's the most recent, I believe.
Okay.
So if you think about that, all right, so that was no COVID, you know, theaters running, good lead up, good movie, $880 million, you know?
Right.
So then to be like, hey, you know, because of COVID, we probably only would have made like $200 million less. So just give us $600 million for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, obviously they don't publicly release it like Disney Plus with the Mulan numbers. I guarantee you someone at Apple and someone at Netflix knows how much money Disney actually made off that movie. And they're like, we would not even come close to sniffing to $600 million. You know what I mean? Dude.
And I heard Mulan was pretty bad.
Also that as well.
I've
seen some clips and it looks like a cheesy 80s. I think I said this last time I was on, like some cheesy 80s. But back to like James Bond, I think it is insanity to ask for $600 million.
Yeah, I mean,
you might have made that at box office. I wouldn't even say you might have, like, you could have made that at box office and that would be a success. And that would be in probably the higher tiers of like box office numbers. But there's no way you can make, they know this, the streaming services know you can't make $600 million profit off a streaming movie. You just can't. Would they pay for it?
And whoever buys this is also going to have to pay additional millions for marketing, dude. Because you got to get the marketing out there. You got to let people know. I mean, the only way this makes sense, if someone's going to pay north of $500 million, it's got to be Apple TV Plus, because Apple's got a shitload of money.
Okay? Apple's got the money to burn. Between Netflix and Apple, they're the ones that can be like deep pockets and spend it.
And they're a new service. They're still not even a year old. So, they have a lot of good shit.
Yeah, but I don't see James Bond as being like the, oh, we need, this is the thing we hitch our wagon to, you know? They'll all come to Apple TV for the new James Bond movie. That's not going to happen.
Like, people should be going to Apple TV because it has good stuff. It's far better than Disney Plus right now. Far better. I don't think it always will be, because once all these Marvel shows start hitting, Disney Plus is going to be great. But there's so much shit on Apple TV Plus that it is worth having, you know, including Ted Lasso.
In terms of like new things.
Yeah.
New
productions, originals. Like, yes. Defending Jacob. You got to watch both of these, dude. Sign into my Apple and watch.
I'm going to. I work 6 10-hour days.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. It's seriously, both shows are so good. Defending Jacob's a great mystery, and Ted Lasso is just...
I've heard nothing but good things about both of them.
Happiest place in the world when you're watching this. So check this out, right? So this is the 25th James Bond movie.
Yes.
Okay, 25th. Now keep in mind, Amazon paid $120 million for Coming to America.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They pay... Apple paid $70 million for the Tom Hanks movie Greyhound, which I heard was really boring and really bad. So check this out. They paid $70 million, but they get the film for 10 years on Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
This $600 million would be a one-year deal.
1 year?
What are they thinking?
So in my head, and again, You know, I'm living in the LA lifestyle, but I'm not in the mind of these TV executives. This has to be just some old, you know, the old typical studio executive that thinks like, oh, James Bond, this is our money horse, you know, give him a year deal. They'll be lucky to get that, you know. Yeah. It's some guy that doesn't, someone offering this deal probably doesn't understand streaming services, like is thinking of this in terms of a theater release deal, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, your theater gets to play James Bond for a year, 6 months or 4 months, you know? I think that has to be the mindset behind these, the people offering this deal to Apple and Netflix.
Yeah. I mean,
you again, like you mentioned, that when you make a deal for $70 million for Greyhound, which again, if Greyhound by Tom Hanks is not in the same universe as a James Bond movie,
right,
granted, but 10 years for 70 million, paying $7 million a year, that's exactly. Chump change for them.
Exactly.
You know?
And then you're looking at $600 million for one, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
So I think this was a tactical move from MGM, because check mm-hmm. this out. So right now, Apple TV Plus is spending $6 billion a year on original content to put on Apple TV Plus to try to get more fans. So yes. $600 million is exactly 10% of their budget for a year. So
that's pretty beefy. That's a pretty beefy level of money to be putting into just one movie.
Right. But that's what MGM's thinking was. Well, like, hey, we're fucking James Bond. I mean, they're like, it's 10%. They're spending $6 billion. So I feel like they thought they could get over on them, but mm-hmm. they're going to need to work with them, because check this out. I think this would be a lot better. Imagine if they were like, okay, how about $200 million? Because I think that's more than enough, because you're still going to
think in terms of what the box office would eventually be. I still don't see us being back in movie theaters to full scale until late next year, honestly.
Agreed.
Are people feeling comfortable? So I think that's well within what box office would be.
So you're saying that if they just waited to release this movie in May, that it wouldn't make that much because of all the restrictions we're still gonna have?
I think it would maybe make sense in a normal year. I think there's like a 30% chance it makes over $600 million. Like, you know, that's like, it's in the ballpark of like, oh, it made a really good amount of money.
Yeah.
You know? It's better to make 880. $600 million is still very good. But in a year like this, no, there's no, it's not getting anywhere near it.
So what they need to do, Drew, mm-hmm. is say, all right, if you give us this money for No Time to Die, we will give you all 25 James Bond movies.
I saw that, and I think that's a great idea. I was looking up who has the rights. 11 of the movies, no one has them rights.
Yeah.
The older ones, the first 11, they're just you just rent them off like Amazon.
This
Prime.
Will draw the Bond fanatics to Apple TV mm-hmm. Plus.
If you say, hey, every single one of them is on there, and if it's like, hey, every single one of them, a 10 year deal, $800 million, that's a smarter offer mm-hmm. than just $600 million for No Time to Die, you know? Yeah. Because most of these titles, like I said, almost half of them are doing nothing. They're gaining no additional revenue.
Yeah,
for MGM.
And getting all 25 will truly bring people to the service.
100%.
It definitely will.
In the same vein that having all the Marvel movies brings it to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously not to that scale, but I mean, like, James Bond is an IP that's nothing to laugh at. You know, it's one of the most universally
for sure
IP. So I think that'd be a great idea, a kind of way to cut the deal a little more evenly.
And just like HBO Max, has all of the Harry Potter movies on mm-hmm. there. And that was one of the things that they launched with. Like, hey, look, we got this. So I think MGM just needs to
sweeten the deal a little bit,
throw in the
right now movie. It's absurd.
Yeah, $600 million for 1 year. Get out of here. Yeah. All right, quickly, we're going to talk about Green Lantern and mm-hmm. then get to The Boys season 2. Okay, so the Green Lantern TV show is coming to HBO Max. Mark Guggenheim, who is the producer, executive producer, says it's going to be written like a TV show, but produced like a movie. They're going to be using a lot of high-tech CGI devices to make this show happen. And if you know what Green Lantern is, that's obviously something that's necessary.
Yeah.
Because of his powers. And it's kind of on the shit end right now because of how bad the film was. And, you know, Ryan Reynolds makes fun of that movie in other movies, in the Deadpool movie. So it's kind of a laughing stock right now. And that's kind of sad to me because Green Lantern is one of my favorite superheroes.
It's a really cool property. It's some of the best stories in DC that I've read. I haven't read a whole lot of DC stories. Some of the best ones have been Green Lantern, or like focused or adjacent even.
Yeah, there's this one where it's a Thanos and Green Lantern crossover, and Thanos tries to steal the ring off of him to add it to his gauntlet. But it's really cool. So Guggenheim says, we're returning to the scene of the crime, basically like acknowledging that Green Lantern's not a hot property right now, but he has a really awesome story in mind, apparently. We're going to get multiple Lanterns. We're going to get Sinestro. Is a great villain.
You got to have him.
Yeah, he's a great villain. It's going to be in production in 2021. No specific dates have been announced yet. No Lanterns have been casted yet, as far as I know.
Yeah, I thought I saw that they released like which like the actual fictional characters are going to be in the show. Like you said, Sinestro and everything.
And Alan Scott and Jessica.
Yeah, they haven't put like actual like human actor names to those characters though yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So I mean, I think this is great. I love what HBO Max is doing with DC. They're really, really making their own Disney Plus type of thing over there. I mean, they tried to launch their own app with the DC Universe app, and it just didn't work. And, you know, they canceled Swamp Thing after an episode, and I heard that show was good. And that's not how you're going to have a successful thing if you're going to just give up like that.
And so I haven't watched a whole lot of DC things. So one of the DC properties I've seen at least a lot of clips of is the new animated Harley Quinn show.
Okay.
On HBO. And I've heard nothing but like incredible things about that.
Yeah.
But I really hope, because I was a fan early on of Arrow. I loved Arrow. I'm like, oh, super awesome. Like first through DC, I'm like, this is the coolest shit ever. And then it started to get a little iffy. And then it kind of became a joke because it was like all the CW DC shows were just awful.
Oh, man.
Like Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, was the League of Tomorrow or the Heroes of Tomorrow. Legends of Tomorrow. Yeah, but like, and like, I'm glad it has an upped CG thing because some of those scenes were like Power Rangers, like Putty Patrol bad. I'm like, I've seen like, back when I was young, watching like Power Rangers, I've seen better fight scenes than Supergirl. And that's like an honest to God statement.
That's amazing.
So I really hope they do good things. I think DC does has some amazing properties and good stories to tell. I mean, I think I've said this before, but like I really hope that DC doesn't go the Marvel route, having this huge interconnected universe. I want to do what it does with its animated films and just do one-off stories where they're all incredible. Where it's like you already know who the Joker, Batman, and Robin is. Here's the killing joke. You already know Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern. Here's Superman, Red Sun.
Exactly.
Here's all these amazing, like, just one-shot comic book arc, hour 40 minutes, good voice acting, good visuals, good art. And you can make, and like, you make it live action, and that's amazing. I love that. And you don't need these huge interconnected things because we already have that with Marvel. That's already, you know, that's already my cup of tea. We're all already overwhelmed with the 25 Marvel movies and 20 TV shows.
And see, I'll tell you what.
Give us something different.
DC, I think they knew that, you know, what they honestly tried to do at first with the DCEU was just to catch up to Marvel as quickly as possible and give us their big stories, but they didn't have any they weren't grounded in anything.
Yeah. Or they didn't think we knew enough about them. So it's like, all right, we're going to give you everything at once. You know, it's like, enough. And it's like,
they did the death of Superman with Doomsday, the third movie. Like, what are you doing? Like, you have to.
That's like doing Thanos in the third movie.
Yes, like, imagine that, dude. Like, you got to build this kind of thing up. You can't just, you know, what? Like, they fucked up. So,
and they did. And I think they realized that. And I think they're doing, you know, really cool directions. I feel like they're doing with, like, the new Suicide Squad, where they're doing. They're super goofy with it.
Yeah.
Like, I saw the poster for it. The poster looks insane. There's 20 different characters. Uh-huh. Like, and it's like, oh, the joke is they're all going to die.
Yeah, and Joel Kinnaman was like, don't get attached to anyone.
They're all going to die. Yeah. Like, Harlequin, maybe like Boomerang, and like a couple other of like the Rick inner
Flag.
Yeah. Those guys will live. everyone else is going to die though. And I love that. Yeah. Like that's that's the premise. I'm not going to watch a superhero movie. I'm going to see, oh, there's John Cena's character. He's going to get his head blown off. There's the weird
well,
rat.
He's got
dude.
A show coming out.
He's got a show. Well, yeah,
it could be a prequel though. It could be a prequel.
Oh, there's the weird rat dude who's played by James Gunn's brother. He's going to die.
I love him, dude. He's great.
Exactly. But like that, like to me, that gets me more excited than the first Suicide Squad. I was like, oh, we're all serious. And here's our generic G.I. Joe human character. And
yeah,
you know,
right.
Like,
exactly.
That does nothing for me.
All you got to do is add Sean Gunn to a James Gunn movie and he'll make you laugh.
Yeah. So I haven't heard a lot about this, but I mean, we're talking right now. I'm excited for DC stuff.
Dude, the fact that they did do that and they're like, you know what? That first Suicide Squad movie never happened. That I give them so much credit for that because honestly, yeah. That's the only thing you can do. It was
to
horrible.
Try and build off of it. It's like, yeah, come on, just horrible. Be goofy with it. It's DC. It's like, it's comets. Like, everyone forgets about that.
And now you're doing Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Yeah.
And you're bringing back Jared Leto to play the Joker again. So let's see if he has anything else in there. David Ayer needs to chill out with the Ayer cut of the Suicide Squad because it makes no sense. They're really making the movie again. Yeah. Why do we need to see your movie? Just give up on that, bro. You look.
He's weird. Like, oh, well, Suicide Squad wouldn't have been better. No, it wouldn't have. All right.
It wouldn't have been. It was so
bad. It would not have been.
The villains were shit. The CGI was shit. That whole movie.
And again, it's like, it reminded me of like almost like a Transformers movie, you know, where it's like, hit the same style plot points. Everything's dark and gritty, muted tone.
Another stupid beam in the sky, just like the new Fantastic Four. Like everybody ripped it off of Avengers, but Avengers did it good in the first Avengers. Okay, that was fun. HBO Max and DC. DC fans have a smile with HBO Max and AT&T partnering up. All right, The Boys season 2 review.
Here we go. Meat and potatoes, baby.
It's been a long episode, man. We can talk forever.
Always.
So I got a couple fun trivia and fun facts real quick that I just want to share with you. First of all, Translucent, new character, was not in a comic. I love when properties that were a graphic novel or a comic does this for for a show or a movie. For instance, Daryl from The Walking Dead, he is not a character in the comic.
No, he's not.
And sometimes you just see what you have and you're like, you know what, we could really do with this kind of character.
I think having a little bit of divergence, just it helps it stand out a bit, but being just like, hey, we're telling this story now from the comics, hey, it's this story now from the comics, you know.
Yeah,
I feel like Marvel kind of falls into that a little bit sometimes, where it's like, hey, here's this comic beat, you all know it, you know. But it also does some good things where it's like, oh, Civil War was a whole completely different thing in the movie. So I love stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. And it keeps the hardcore comic fans on their toes. So they can't really, you know, why would you want to guess everything that happened in a comic book movie? It's not like reading a book and then going to see the movie. It's totally different.
Yeah.
It's awesome to have a background knowledge of these characters, but then seeing a story unfold in front of your eyes with this amazing CGI, it's getting better and better and better and better. Which, speaking of better and better and better, imagine how good Avatar 2, 3, and 4 are going to look. Wow. That, like, say what you will about those movies, but James Cameron makes them look insane.
They're just in, like, 2-hour long tech demos.
Oh, dude. Crazy.
New CGI.
And how long he takes in between. Wow. All right. So Translucent is a character for the show. In the graphic novel, the remaining member of the Seven was an alien character named Jack from Jupiter, and that's DC's Martian Manhunter.
Yeah,
pretty much, The Boys makes a mockery of DC because even the Seven, that's the original Justice League, Unite the Seven.
Oh yeah, it's Homelander, Superman. Like you have later on, I think a lot of these trivia facts, like you have Maeve as Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's one of them coming.
They're all these things, and it's very it's like that's why The Boys is cool. It's like this is what like real Superman would be like. You know, he would not be this like well-adjusted boy from Kansas. He would probably be some messed up dude with a superiority complex.
I got a funny thing about him at the end. So the show actually had to tone down the sex, drugs, and profanity. In the comic, it was much more graphic.
Which means I need to read the comic.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe.
insane when, like, the second episode they went to a superhero sets club, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, seriously. Now this part interests me a lot. I actually do want to read these comics along with Umbrella Academy, but apparently in the Umbrella Academy they skip right to, like, when the action starts. Like, they skip like 50 issues or something like that, because they do a lot of intros. That's what Gerard Way said. So I think I would read the Boys comic first. If I were going to
I think
either.
The Boys comic probably, from what I've seen, the Boys comic interests me a lot.
Yeah. So Madeline Stillwell's character and Stormfront were both men in the comic book series. And think about that. They're both love interests for Homelander.
I about to say, I think the fact that they're both women makes it so much more. I haven't read the comics yet, but to me, it's like that's their characters and where they are in the corporate sense of it are like they're very good as women. You know, you need them as women to be the love interests.
Okay, so a couple more things here. The designer of Starlight's new costume is based on the character of the costume designer Edna from The Incredibles, and I believe she is based on a real life person. So that's like
I believe she is from a famous like architect or like dress designer or something.
Yeah. Aya Cash, who plays Stormfront, this was her first action role. She usually plays normal characters in comedies and dramas. That's great. She did a fantastic job.
Knocked it out of the park. Very bold choice, though, to be the literal Nazi character, though.
So speaking of that, it's funny because, well, it's not funny. Fuck Nazis. But Stormfront is the name of an infamous neo-Nazi internet message board.
That's and pretty crazy.
After I watched the first couple episodes, I was on Twitter and people were like, it's a conspiracy. I can't believe they named this character Stormfront. You guys think it's about lightning bolts? She's racist. And dude, that was part of the show. Just like, relax a little bit. Wait a little bit. But they were like,
it literally is.
Yeah. They were acting like they were outing it and figuring it out. And the show should be canceled because of that. It's literally part of the show.
That's like the gimmick of the character.
Yeah. Okay, so here is the transparency we see between the Seven and the Justice League. There are some elements of the Avengers and X-Men as well. Homelander, the ultimate hero, is you know, Superman mixed with Captain America.
Yeah.
You can find that if you watch an hour of the show. You'll figure that out.
Not even. Like, you see his, like, intro and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, because it's Superman with Captain America.
His motifs and his costume. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Captain America mindset.
I do love the scene where he's like, I'm the one that said to put the American flag on my back, and he's like so proud of that one like marketing decision.
Yeah, I mean, they do this literally, it's a huge corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny how they deal with everything. Queen Maeve, Warrior Princess, obviously Wonder Woman, Black Noir, they're saying silent, brooding, stealthy, basically Batman with a little bit of Black Bolt and G.I. Mm-hmm. Joe's Snake Eyes.
I see more like Snake Eyes. Yeah. Snake Eyes and like Batman is definitely like the myths I say.
Yeah. The Deep, obviously, like Aquaman and the Submariner.
I love the Deep, because it's like he's based off the aquatic superheroes, which in like a meta format, everybody rips on for how useless they would be. You know, everyone's like, oh, how helpful would Aquaman be? What's he gonna do? Call some fish to the scene of the fire?
Yeah. And hey, why doesn't Aquaman have gills? I think he should have gills.
Oh my God. It's like literally all that stuff is just like into the deep, and that's why he's insecure.
Yeah. A-Train, you get speedsters like the Flash and Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Starlight, a character who can control light, like Dr. Light mixed with the Dazzler.
Dazzler or Jubilee is probably like what I would say.
What's Dazzler? Is that Marvel?
Yeah, Dazzler and Jubilee are both Marvel. Well, Jubilee is from the she was the original character made for the X-Men animated show.
I know her.
But no, definitely I see both of those.
And then you have Translucent with the Invisible Woman and Lamplighter, Pyro, or Ezekiel. So, I mean, a lot of these we already knew, but it's cool to see them written down.
To see them.
Exactly.
And then to see like how the Marvel or DC versions of them, like how the Boys version of them kind of exposes their real vices, you know?
Yeah. Okay. And then Black Noir's tree nut allergy was inspired by the actor Nathan Mitchell, mm-hmm. who has a real tree nut allergy in real life. It's funny. We never saw his face until this season, until he had his little allergy incident.
Yeah.
I don't think he's dead.
I believe he's alive still. So yeah. At the press conference at the end, I believe he's like, they said he's hospitalized by alive or something like that. So
yeah.
And like all good superhero tropes, they're not dead until you see them get exploded on screen. You know?
Speaking
so Stormfront's still alive. Yeah.
Okay. Two more little facts. The end scene in season 2, when Homelander was jerking off into the moon.
Yeah.
On floating above the Chrysler building. That was shot last mm-hmm. year. That was shot for season 1, but it was rejected by Amazon executives. They thought the scene would have been too much for such a new show. But then I guess they saw that the fans love how crazy and out there mm-hmm. it is.
I'm glad they brought it back. So I went like the subreddit for The Boys for the first time after I finished this season. And the first thing I saw was like, oh my God, they brought back that scene. And as it's apparently it's been known for like since season 1 it aired that the scene was like in the pipe or on the chopping block. So I think it's and it fits very well with the what happened before.
Brad from Canada tweeted after he saw it. He's like, I never thought I needed Homelander jerking off to the moon.
Yeah, like, but I did.
Yeah. Like he kept saying like I can do anything I want to do. Like I'm the mm-hmm. best. Like he's yeah. just losing his mind, dude. He loved that Nazi bitch. He really did. Okay. Lastly, in the graphic novel, eventually all of the boys, including Huey, consume Compound V and gain superpowers. This leads to many graphic beatdowns of various soups. As you know, it's not just the 7. Soups are everywhere.
Yeah.
All around the country, protecting various cities. We saw a little bit of that when we saw the Deep get shipped over to Ohio.
Yeah, when there's like the Arrow dude and yeah. then...
And it's always fun seeing a new superhero or a new soup because you always immediately think of what their powers remind you of or who they remind you
yeah.
of. And it's just neat seeing all types of new powers that they keep adding.
For sure.
So although Homelander is supposed to be stronger than them all, in the show, Kimiko is the only one that has superpowers of the boys. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they ever fight Homelander in the comic. I'm guessing that's what this was alluding to.
Yeah.
But say this happens where they have to face off with Homelander. Obviously, if the boys want to help, they're going to have powers.
I don't want them to, though.
I'm saying, do you think we'll see it happen?
Maybe some of them, like, I don't think all of them, especially Butcher, you know, because I feel like the whole thing of like the boys is like, they're just dudes, you know, like, I mean, obviously they're all good at like, fuck, like three, everyone but Huey is like a trained killer, but for the most part, they're just humans, you know, and the yeah. fact that they're able to stand toe to toe in a sense with a lot of these superheroes. And that's kind of the whole plot of the show is. Like even like Homelander with the blackmail, like the entity on the planet that can kill all of humanity is brought to his knees by some blackmail because he doesn't want his ego to get hurt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's the premise of the show. And I feel like to be like, oh, but now the boys all have superpowers and Huey can fly and
yeah.
you
know, Huey can fly.
Butcher has Wolverine claws now or some shit like that, yeah. you know? I don't know. I feel like that would just take away a little, for me at least, that would take away from kind of the main message.
Yeah, it's funny. The recency bias, man. People want to see him as Wolverine in the MCU. That's not going to happen. No. I mean, he already played a character in the MCU.
I don't think that's a great fit.
I don't either, man. I think they should actually pick someone younger, and I think they should pick someone shorter. Just go with the comic accuracy.
They should. I want real short, like 5'3" Wolverine. Yeah. That's what I want.
When we were
of meat and muscle.
When we went out for Greg's bachelor party at the Eagles game, and Chuck was there.
Yeah.
Chuck kept saying that I want a shorter Wolverine, and now I agree with him.
Why not?
Which, by the way, we were recommended by Chuck to watch Mr. Mercedes on Peacock. It's a Stephen King work, so okay. I'm cool. going to check that out before next week. I don't know which co-host will be with me, but it'll be either Drew or Chone or Pat. That is Scene Invaders. We're always just gonna have, there'll be someone and me, and we'll give you guys stuff to listen to. All right, so let's get into the actual season. Thoughts?
Yeah.
Better than season 1?
I thought 1 through 9, like it's basically, I was not a huge fan of the ending.
Okay.
I don't, unless the show is over, I don't like seeing the heroes win. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
I like a season ending on struggle or them being behind the eight ball.
Yeah. They definitely got a huge win at the end of that season.
Exactly. And I've heard many people say, oh, it's going to be a time skip now. I think that is the only way you can advance in the next season.
I agree.
Is it to be a 3 or 4 year time skip and let them grow and develop.
I agree.
Which, I also don't like time skips and you don't really see a lot of stuff and a lot of it's like exposition.
Yeah, I don't want to see Huey away from the boys. I want him back with the boys, you know?
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm all right with it being a time skip. I really, like season one ending, I really liked. It was like, all right, they're behind the eight ball. They're screwed, kind of, you know. Everything's looking against them. How are they going to get out of the situation?
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like most, in my mind, how I like a lot of my shows to be ending on. Outside of that, I thought this season absolutely was an elevation of everything they did around the first season. I thought they killed it.
Yeah, I didn't think so at first, but the more as time moved on, mm-hmm. it got better and better and better. And I really like what they did with this new supervillain we have, man. Because you called it, by the way. Great call. Yeah, you said she was the one that was blowing up heads.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't remember that.
You said that on our episode 7. You're like, yeah, the politician person with the really average name.
Oh yeah,
I still can't.
Like something, I think it's Coffin, I believe.
It's like Victoria, right?
Or yeah,
like
yeah, yeah. But so, and someone mentioned like if you go back to that scene,
Victoria
eyes,
Newman.
Yeah, Newman. But her eyes are like darting around, and like you can like see it. She's very clearly the one like blowing up people's heads.
Wait, if you go back to the where was she?
Well, she's in the courtroom because she was there for the hearing.
She didn't even realize she was in the courtroom.
She is covered in blood.
I gotta watch that again. Does she look scared?
She looks panicked, but she like, and like it kind of hints at it a little bit where like she'll look at a person, and it'll cut to them, the head blows up, cuts back to her scared. So it's like it was a very nice like little nod to it. But yeah, I mean, I'm very interested to see how it goes. I mean, I thought it did very well of like also expanding the lore in like very cool ways, you know?
Yeah.
To where we got a lot of different threads that with this new time skip, I'm assuming it's gonna be really cool to see how they grow.
Yeah. I'm excited, dude. I mean, it's the best show on TV. It really is.
Absolutely.
I don't know what they're gonna do with Victoria Newman now. Like, what is her end game?
I'm also wondering. I mean, I hope it's not just like, oh, I want money, because I feel like that's Giancarlo Esposito's character.
Yeah.
I feel like his character is like, and it's kind of shown in that one scene with with Butcher, where he's like, oh yeah, I'll make more money if Homelander's under control, you know, so I'll just do that.
Because, dude, she's trying to take them down, but she's also saving their ass.
Yeah.
Because anytime someone got too close, she killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the FBI agent.
She was trying to hurt Vog, right? I forgot what it's called.
Yeah.
Trying to hurt Vog, also like, yeah, like you had saved them by protecting Vought. Oh, I saw Vog. Vought. She's trying to protect them, right, as well. So it's very, I don't see where her end game is going, but I'm super interested to see what it is.
Yeah, I have no clue, dude. And we're just learning more about these powers. Like, I honestly thought it was a chip in their heads. I was way off. I thought Vought found a way to put chips in people's heads.
Yeah.
But when everybody started randomly dying, I was like, wait a minute. Why would that judge have something in his head?
Yeah.
So then you guys kind of got it into my head that it had to be a soup or a villain, you know, whatever you want to call it. But I had no idea it was her. I mean, you called it. You did say it. But
I'll have to listen back and confirm that.
Yeah, you did. You're like, it's the person with the really plain name. And she's and I said her name, and you're like, yeah, it's her.
Yeah, that one.
you just thought.
We're kind of joking now. Very plain name. I think it kind of lends a lot to the writing of the show, where it's like, it was literally the character most people probably did not expect, you know?
Right.
Or at least coming from like us as like average viewers, you know, where it's like we could barely remember like the character's name. She was so like, not involved in the story, but just so like behind the scenes and like just kind of blended in with the scene. It was like kind of just a conveyance of the narrative,
yeah,
as opposed to actually pushing it.
Yeah, right. I mean, there were so many neat things. I mean, we met Lamplighter this mm-hmm. season. We heard about him last season. I love how they did that. And apparently they're doing that again for season three, where mm-hmm. you're gonna meet the first superhero, like the Captain America, legit first superhero.
Well, that's Soldier Boy, right?
Soldier Boy, yeah.
Yes. Well, he has his own team. I forget what they're called, but they're basically introducing a second superhero team.
So it's literally like Captain America and
yes, I've read online. This is the Soldier Boy's team is the Marvel equivalent of the Seven.
It's so cool, dude.
Which I think is awesome. It's so cool. Yeah.
The way they plan things out and they have everything all figured out. That's why it's the best show on TV. Mm-hmm. And like, I love comics. I love comic book movies, but I can poke fun at some of them sometimes. And yeah. that's what this does. Like,
and just again, they are comics. I mean, if you look at what comics came from, if you've ever read like the 60s and 70s of like, and like comics, like Spider-Man, like, so there's some goofy ass villains. Like, one of them was just a dude inside of a wheel at some point. Yeah. It's like, like, comics come from a very goofy and fun place, and it's like, it's cool to see this very gritty, like, realistic reimagining of it.
Right. And like, you know that I forget what I was gonna say. Oh, Erin Moriarty's character, what's her name? Starlight?
Yes.
So her relationship with Huey has always been kind of like they're made for each other, but they're like Romeo and Juliet at the same time.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, my family hates your family.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But now she's like cleared and her mm-hmm. name is good again, and they're not trying to tank her. But now Huey is working for the ultimate villain, and he doesn't even
realize it.
Yeah, and he doesn't even know. So like, and this person, she can blow up heads, it seems like, no matter what, as long as she's looking at you, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the distance to it or whatever, but
yeah, but it seems to be very like,
yeah, when she killed
the, very powerful, it seems to hit
the Church of the Collective or whatever. Mm-hmm. When she killed that guy,
it was like across, like over a yard through a window, and just fucking popped him.
Yeah. And she popped all those heads in that courtroom. So, I mean, she is dangerous, dude.
Yeah, and then she was popping, and then the courtroom seems she was popping Soup's heads.
Yeah.
She and killed the knockoff A-Train.
Yes. Yeah, Shockwave.
Shockwave,
and
yeah.
And we just learned of that other bald woman who was in the psychiatric facility mm-hmm. who can blow up entire bodies.
Yeah.
So, it seems to be the same power, more
or kind of some sort of telekinetic thing. But, yeah, exactly, where it's like, yeah. There are still some very powerful players out in the boys universe.
Yeah. So, I mean,
while I didn't like the ending in the sense of everyone kind of got a happy ending for the most part, it definitely still has a lot of really cool lead ups that I think obviously they know exactly the route they're going. I think you mentioned where it's like, they know they want to do like four or five seasons of this and then that's it. Like, they have an end goal in mind.
Yeah. And it's so genius, dude. You got it. Like, when you're taking on a project like this, I think it's the best thing to know how many seasons you want to do. Like, mm-hmm. that's
what, or at least try, and yeah, you need some sort of limitations.
Yeah, like Walking Dead had no clue, and they had about 4 years there where they lost a show. I mean,
that's meandering. It's just you don't want to just wander through and just be. If you set some good limitations, especially for a TV show, and you just get to it in a solid pacing. Yeah. It elevates it to another level, you know? Yeah. I mean, imagine if, like, Breaking Bad was 10 seasons.
I know. It would
be like, all right, I mean, like, it would still be good, but it's like, all right, you're wandering around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of filler stuff where it's like, you cut it down to the necessities, not make it, like, bare or, like, not, or nature or anything like that, but it's like, you just get what you need and get going. And I think makes it a lot better.
I'm actually really excited that Dexter's coming back for one more run.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, too.
Did you ever watch it straight through?
I didn't, because when I heard about it, I heard how terrible the ending was.
It's literally 30 seconds.
And that's I know, but that's such a real turnoff for me.
I know.
Because I love having like good cathartic ending to a show or a series. So just being hearing like, oh, it's the worst ending of all time and stuff like that. So I'm like,
it's just such a shame because it's literally only 30 seconds as bad.
Which I know, is I've heard so many people say the exact same thing where it's like, oh, if you just watch it, it's so good, but then like the ending sucks. I'm like, all right, well, like the ending's kind of the point.
But I think you should watch it because now it's coming back.
I might watch it now that there's the new ending.
Yeah, so they're going to fix it. I think they're going to fix it. I won't say anything about it because I truly think you should watch Dexter straight through. It mm-hmm. is very, very good. But, and you know, my opinion anyway. All right, we've been talking for a while. I think that's good enough. Please, guys, get your emails in, sceneinvaders@gmail.com. I want to do a fan email segment next week. If there's something about the boys that we didn't cover, let me know. We'll cover it. Drew will come back on.
Yeah.
I love having him on. He's in California and I miss him like crazy.
You too, man.
And all right, that's pretty much it. Thank you guys so much, and I'll see you next week.
Peace out, y'all.
Oh, thank you.